Following is an UptownRadio.net production.
JasonCharles.net.
Deep talk, deep sounds.
I am the East Village.
On JasonCharles.net.
Hello, hello, and welcome to I on the East Village. My name is Alex Carpenter, here with my co-host Megan Haywood. We are recording again here at the awesome High Note Radio Bar at 188 Avenue B, which is between 11th and 12th Streets here in the East Village, for our second co-production with them. You can find out more about High Note and their super cool roster of live DJ shows at high-note.nyc. That's high-note@nyc. And of course, all of the co-production information will be available on the jasoncharles.net podcast network talk channel, I in the East Village series page. And with all that said, we would love to very warmly welcome our guest on the show today, artist, filmmaker, author, and probably lots of other things that we'll get into, Ethan Minsker. Welcome, Ethan.
Hello, thank you.
Hello.
And I know your most recent project was a feature-length documentary about the East Village artist Scooter LaForge, which has just recently become available on pretty much every streaming service around, so we definitely want to delve deeply into that. But just by way of a more general introduction, I wanted to ask you about what to me is the most glaringly obvious aspect of your own art practice, which is that you pretty much do everything from writing, publishing, to filmmaking, visual art, animation, activism. Can you tell us about how you came to be such a multifaceted artist and maybe where that journey began?
I think I covered... There's another film that I made that I feel like you both did your homework on and watched, Man in Camo. And in that film, I talk a little bit about dealing with depression, and there's another film I made called Self-Medicated, a film about art. So that's more focused on it. But I basically keep my mental center by continuously creating. So I have a very strict routine or exercise of when I wake up, working a few hours on one project and then moving to the next project. And I do that throughout the day until I have to do one of my paying jobs, which keep me able to stay in New York City and pay all the bills.
That's something I definitely appreciate. And perhaps just to kind of get a little personal first, we should explain how Megan and I personally know you, other than both being residents of the East Village. I first became acquainted with you because I'd made a short video portrait of Scooter LaForge, which was right around the time you were finishing your documentary about him. And Scooter suggested I show it to you to possibly include it in your film. And I'm very glad he made that connection for us. You did end up using some of the video in a very dark part of the movie, and I loved how you used it, but I was curious about what went into that decision.
Yeah, the video of Scooter is like this portrait where it's very dark. He's like pretty much in red light, and it blends between different images of him. So when I watch it, if you watch it without the sound, it seems like it's a really dark introspection into his own psyche. And in the section in the film, it talks about him being bullied and dealing with depression. So I'm not sure if you meant it to be like a super high, fancy, less, you know, I'm very happy. But yeah, I totally translated into like a dark, sad moment. And it, to me, it works perfectly in the film. And also on a side note, it's, you know, I didn't realize you were the same artist that had made that video. So when we screened it at Doc NYC, you know, I briefly met you. I didn't realize you were the same Alex that did the video. And I see these photographs that we have of all of us, the cast and the crew and everybody, and you're off to the side. And I'm like, that is so frustrating because he should be right in the middle with us because he worked on the damn film. So
you had a lot going on that night.
Yeah. And I actually really met you when going into Third and Bazaar and East Village Vintage Collective, meeting you in those shops and then seeing your artwork and being like, oh, I really like his art. His art really kind of connects to me and my kind of like punk rock background. And then somebody being like, oh, yeah, you know, this is the guy that did the video. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, then it blew my mind. Like, wait, I met you at the screening and didn't realize it. I met you here and just liked your artwork. And now, and then the third part is then being like, oh, yeah, I make music. That's the main thing. And being like, well, I make films and I'm always looking for music. So
it's, we're all wearing way too many hats, I think.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's good that all those connections come to be that way. It's interesting.
I think that's kind of the magic of the East Village, for those of you who are not from the East Village, is that, you know, it's a neighborhood historically where it's like the wetlands of creativity. So a lot of artists come here to develop their talents, become successful, and move on. Lady Gaga is a perfect example of that, and many, 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 many others. So meeting artists who do different sort of practices and then figuring out how to collaborate with them is something that I very much enjoy.
Yeah, it's a very cool, small world around here. And on that note, I saw and appreciated your art and knew Scooter separately. He had painted the walls over at Third and Bazaar at one point. And we had become friends. And then I saw that you were collaborating with him on the film. And so I'm seeing your art, I'm seeing his art, I'm liking both of your art, and then I see you're doing something together, and I was like, wow, what a cool combo. And then watching the film, I actually saw so many other artists that I know from around the neighborhood. The fact that you ended up using Alex's stuff, and he had done an art project with Scooter as well. And when I was watching the film, I watched it again last night, and I was like, there I am. I was actually, my arm was in the film.
Oh, which part?
In the par was I was distributing food in Tompkins Square Park.
Oh, yeah. Nice. And my daughter has a little cameo in there, too, running towards the camera.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So to preface this for the people listening, there's a new film that I had come out a couple of weeks ago called Scooter LaForge, A Life of Art. You can find that on Amazon, Google Play, YouTube Movies. There is an IMDb page, a Rotten Tomatoes page, so please, if you watch it, leave reviews. I need that to spread word of mouth and metadata. But yeah, the movie focuses on an artist and his journey and brings it from his past right up to the present, covering COVID and the riots and all of that stuff with George Floyd right there in the end. And how an artist copes and pivots to survive, I think, is the big thrust of that movie.
Yes, I agree. And I just have to say about Scooter that he's such a giving person, and that it was during that same time that he came and painted the walls at Third and Bazaar. We sold some of his t-shirts. It was really fun to work with him in that way. But he's just, even we'll talk more about the film, but even talking about where I saw my arm in the film, that day he painted a bunch of signs for our food giveaway on Thanksgiving and during the holidays. And I just feel like he's such a kind and nice person. And one of the things that I think that really shines through in the film, and that's the experience I've had with him always.
I'd say, like, you know, somebody wrote a review saying that how they watched Man in Camo and then watched this movie and said that it is a lot of learning for me in Scooter LaForge, which is true. And it's really pointed that somebody could see that, because I learn a lot from Scooter. I call him human Valium because we have two different sort of approaches in life. And these things are also both covered in both Man in Camo and the Scooter LaForge film, is that we were both bullied when we were young, and we found creativity as a way to for salvation and to keep our mental center somewhere positive instead of going into the negative. Again, Scooter's teaching me a lot. So it's things like your shop where he does the thing, and then I meet Delphine at the film and then ran into her in a bar and said, you know, I have art. I'd like to put my art in your shop.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I go and bring my own art following Scooter's lead.
Right.
So in the film, there's galleries and things like that that I've met through Scooter, that I've had shows and, you know, approach the same sort of like dogged, like, Scooter thinks this is good. I think Scooter is right. I will follow Scooter's lead.
Right.
And try to get my stuff in as many places as possible as well.
Well, that was something I was going to bring up, too, is that we know we sell your art at East Village Vintage Collective, which is amazing. We had it for a while at Third and Bazaar. You had a super cool window display going on over there that everyone loved, and we got constant compliments on it. And, you know, it's interesting to me how you feel about selling in shops around the East Village or elsewhere versus selling in galleries or to collectors, or because I know you're doing all of it.
Yeah, I'd say like my experience with collectors and galleries is I'll sell like maybe one item in a year, a couple of $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
But that won't cover much of the bills. So I'm always trying to figure out ways I can cover more months of bills in art practice. So whether that's selling visual arts or revenue from films or teaching at FIT or doing film editing and animation, all of those things. So I think it was Jerry Saltz who said, artists need to sell artwork at the price of a cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So I make these tiny little pieces of art that I sell for roughly $5 in a thing called Artomat. Artomat puts these cigarette machines around the country. They convert them to sell original art. So I do that. That covers a couple of months. And then I was like, well, there's all these vintage places in the East Village where they're selling art. I'm going to go approach them because then I don't have to box it. I don't have to mail it. I make more of a higher revenue from it. And also each of these has my bio and a little website on it. So I'm reaching out to more people. Mm-hmm. So again, like items that are $5 to $50 selling through the collective of vintage shops has been bringing in a smaller, you know, a steady small income that over the course of a year turns out to be like a larger chunk and mm-hmm. it helps to offset bills.
Right. Very smart. Very smart.
Well, I'm always trying something new. Always trying something new to survive in this city.
I know. I think it's part of the hustle, right? We all have to hustle to make it work.
I did want to add, though, how somebody from an eye on the East Village would know who I am. So can I interject that in there?
Yes, please. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So being that this specific podcast is about the East Village, and if you were a listener, you might think, like, who is this person who's, you know, historically wearing camo suits at art events? And so.
And now.
Yeah.
We'll
right
just
now.
Just mention that.
And you both are wearing Scooter LaForge t-shirts, which are amazing. Originally, I was moved to New York City in 88. I did a fanzine called East Coast Exchange, which covered the punk rock scene in D.C. and New York City, covering the Sunday matinee hardcore shows for a few years, starting in 88. Then that fanzine turned into Psycho Moto Zine, which I did all the way up till the pandemic when I lost access to free copy machines at the place I was working, which was a broadcast network in Times Square area, mm-hmm. where they had many, many floors of copy machines that were not supervised. Mm-hmm. And so I would put out lots of issues of Psycho Moto Zine, which is a fanzine that covered art, poetry, music, whatever, anything creative. I would have collaborations with artists and put it in there and focus on individual artists, primarily 60% female artists from mostly New York City, but also around the world. So doing that, and then plus I was a bartender in a lot of East Village bars, including Niagara, Black and White, 2A, Bowery Electric. But most people who probably met me on a one-to-one basis came into Niagara, saw this bald, tattooed guy who was surly and probably not so pleasant and would definitely give you a hard time if you didn't tip me. And if you tried to use the bathroom without permission, I probably muscled you out of the bar. So, again, Avenue A and 7th Street, Niagara.
Yes.
And in that space, we started doing art shows, and we developed a group called the Antagonist Art Movement, where we showcased over 3,000 artists on a weekly basis doing one-night art shows, 2 months art shows upstairs based on a theme. We had a music night on Mondays. We had a writer's night on Sundays, which had a lot of like Augustus Burroughs, Lakes McNeil, a lot of like predominant writers in the neighborhood would come and do stuff, and a lot of unknown mm-hmm. people. And we did movies and did art shows, then invited to do art shows around the world in other countries like Ecuador, Germany, Australia, and other cities in the U.S. But that was the antagonist movement, was to develop venues for artists where you could show without worrying about the economic ramifications. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard for artists to get an opportunity to show unless you're already established. So we made venues and bars and coffee shops, and also did street takeovers and street art to try to create as many venues for artists so that they had a starting place. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I did a film in the 90s called Anything Boys Can Do, which covered women in the punk rock scene in the Lower East Side, which was pretty popular in the neighborhood. Terrible title, Anything Boys Can Do.
Yeah.
But the film documents all like just women-focused bands and how sexism plays within music, and it's all very relevant today in that scene. So that is how you would know who I am in the East Village, if you know me at all.
Yes.
Which also brings me back to why I wanted to show, put my art in all of those vintage stores, mm-hmm. including, is it called Hackett?
Hackett, yeah.
Hackett. Mm-hmm. Is that I kept running into artists on Avenue B, and like, none of these young punks know who I am, and I've been doing art here for 30 years. So I'm going to make, you know, a concerted effort to put my paper mache artwork into these shops mm-hmm. and have it in a, you know, the non-drinking bar and the thrift stores and I mean the vintage clothing stores mm-hmm. and all of those places, so I can reestablish my presence on Avenue B. I used to live on Avenue B between 3rd and 4th for 12 years.
Oh, okay. So you're right there by 3rd and Bazaar. Yeah.
Yeah, right around the corner.
The corner. Mm-hmm.
At the time, it was living above an illegal gambling joint.
Oh.
And the neighborhood was definitely not as friendly as it was.
Yeah.
It would be in the times when you called it Alphabet City, mm-hmm. not the East Village, mm-hmm. which I firmly still believe it's Alphabet City mm-hmm. and not the East Village. Mm-hmm. I'm not really thrilled with all the real estate moguls and mm-hmm. every new person moving in being like, it's the East Village.
Mm-hmm. No. You mean like two mm-hmm. bridges?
Yeah. It's Alphabet City.
Yeah.
And Knives Out, be prepared.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
What is it? Avenue A, A-OK. Avenue B, be careful. Avenue C,
crazy.
Avenue D, you're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I literally would sit outside. I sat on my fire escape one day, watched someone come out of the illegal gambling joint, drop a knife on the ground, and there was blood everywhere. And I realized he'd been stabbed in the gut, and then he walked off. And then the owner of the gambling joint came out, looked up and saw me. And I was like, oh, man, like, I really don't want you yeah. seeing me seeing that.
I didn't see anything. Yeah.
Yeah. My very first day on Avenue B, I saw this old guy walking across the street late at night, and 40 kids run down the street and kick the shit out of him and run off.
Oh, no.
It was during the time of, like, wilding. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like packs of kids would go kick
yeah,
your ass.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh, man.
Mm.
So, oh. Yeah.
I know, and it's interesting now because it's like you'll hear people complaining, and I'm just like, you don't know what it was like.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And at Niagara, I remember they installed an ATM outside, and a woman came in and being like, why is there so many receipts on the ground? I'm really upset. Like, who do I complain about? And I'm like, lady, if that's what you're complaining about. We're literally, like, actually, in that same time period, I had a backyard. I would do these large, massive barbecues. And then one time we did it on Halloween on Avenue C and 9th Street. 9th and C. Mm-hmm. Same building where the guy killed his girlfriend and fed her to the homeless, right?
Oh, wow. I don't know if I know that story. Wow.
I have other stories on that. And we're having a huge party on the roof. And my friends were taking watermelons and putting blockbusters in it. Blockbusters are like a quarter stick of dynamite,
okay.
lighting it and throwing them off the roof. And at one point, an ambulance had came up, and they were like throwing one on the ambulance, and it blew up on the roof. So the cops came, and it was like 30, 40 cops rolling up deep. Whose party is this? And I'm like, oh, shit. No one tell them it's my party.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're coming closer. And then on 13th Street, a riot came out because there was the 13th Street riots with the squat.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And all the cops got called. They all left. I did not get arrested.
All right.
They went over to 13th Street, and that was when they brought an actual tank. NYPD,
wow.
Fully armored tank came rolling up, and then that street was locked off for the next, 3 years where they had guards.
Wow.
Those stations on either side
of the
block,
right.
And they checked everyone's ID, and they evicted everybody from that squat.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
Wow.
But anyway, so the point is I used to do these parties, get hired in the bars, bartending, doing parties, and part of that other thing of how people might know me in the neighborhood is I did a party called Revolver on Wednesdays at Black and White Bar with a gentleman, Jack Walls, who's really known in the contemporary art world. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of celebrity rock and roll musicians who would DJ and artists and stuff like that. So we did that for a few years in the early 2000s.
Cool. Yeah. You're definitely someone that people in the East Village should know the history
but
of.
But they don't. That's why I have to continuously
keep putting your art in
stuff.
Those stores.
I'm trying.
Yeah. But I like the idea of art coming out of this violence. And, you know, watching Man in Camo, you did grow up around a lot of other violence in D.C. and Boston. And
yeah.
Is that, the quick sidetrack, is that the concept behind the camo? Like, I think you said art is like...
combat.
Your combat,
you have to be ready.
Right.
You have to be ready for combat if you're going to try to be successful creatively. Yeah, part of it is the white suits like Truman Capote and Mark Twain and all of those would have this kind of professional persona.
Mm-hmm.
And also like writers, like, you know, I have this fictional thing of like a writer coming up to his manual typewriter and putting on the suit and being ready to be creative. So when I do events, this is my Superman versus my Clark Kent when you see me just looking like a bald, tattooed
yeah.
guy in an old band shirt. So it's part of that.
Right.
I would also like to note that a lot of the violence that I talked about growing up in D.C. in the 80s, you know, having like 10 friends murdered there, the people I grew up with went two ways, and a lot of them are still in mm-hmm. the criminal element, and I'm not a part of that world. I just want to...
Yeah.
That's the other reason, like, you know, growing up through a lot of violence and around a lot of violence, and to preface that, you know, I grew up dyslexic. I found a lot of comfort in the punk rock scene in D.C., and it just turned out that as much creativity there is there, there's also ended up being a lot of violence. Mm-hmm. So part of making the move to New York was to distance myself from that violent thing, but then coming to New York and finding there's a lot of violence mm-hmm. in the hardcore scene here. So I try to focus more on the creativity and positive, you know, and trying to build artist communities and ways that you can help people and things like that, as opposed to
violence. I feel like that's definitely something that I can relate to. And I remember when I first moved to New York a long time ago, that I would have conversations with people and say like, oh yeah, and then this happened. And they'd kind of go looking at me with like, what? I mean, when you're so immersed in that, you talk about it like it's just the everyday thing. And then, I realized very quickly that not everyone had that same experience.
You're suffering post-traumatic stress
right.
disorder.
Mm-hmm.
From that, and you don't right. realize until
you
you're away from that.
Compartmentalize it.
And that's why I spent, you know, so many years writing those two books and
yeah.
making ways to exercise these demons and
right.
using creativity to try to heal myself.
Yeah, I mean, you chose the right path. It so very easily can go the other direction.
Well, I definitely would probably be murdered if I didn't.
Well, let's talk about, you have a website, ethanminska.com, and that is where people can go to see the Scootalaforge documentary, or at least find the links.
Yeah.
They click on films, they'll see a list of where you can stream the documentary, and we want to encourage people to watch it and like and review, help build the visibility. But let's just go back, because I don't think we ever asked what the first connection with you and Scooter was to
sure.
inspire you to make the film.
So Scooter shows art at a place called Hal Happening Gallery, and I show a lot of films there, Hal Happening Gallery. And if you are another East Village, more on the older art scene, You can go to Hal Happening. They also have an archive on Bowery, but they have a gallery on First Street, in Bowery. Mm-hmm. And he shows there a lot. I had a lot of artists, specifically this artist James Rubio that I've been working with for more than 20 years as another part of the antagonist movement, who would constantly be like, you got to check out my friend Scooter. You got to check out my friend Scooter. I love Scooter. Enough to the point where I was like, I don't want to hear about this. And, you know, like, you're annoying me. And then when I met Scooter, I was like, oh, he's like a really nice guy and I like what he does. And then I looked more into his art and I'm like, wow, his art really aligns what I do creatively, meaning that my style is always sort of described as witty. And then I describe it, if you look at it, it's witty, but it's always very dark undertones. It's always funny, but at the same time, tragic. And his is also funny and it's also tragic. Mm-hmm. So the more I got to know him, the more our stories aligned. And the more I spent with him, the more I wanted to hang out with him because he's just a good person to be around. And so I said, hey, what about me just doing a short? And he was like, well, I don't know, because a lot of people do films on him. If you search his name, you'll find lots of news coverage. And they always do terrible coverage and it's always very short. And sometimes they put cartoon music on it, which he hates. Oof. And he was like, just don't do cartoon music. And I'm like, I guarantee you there's no chance that you'll hear cartoon music in any film I ever do, even if you requested it.
Right.
And so that short, you know, started as a short. I keep showing him stuff and then just keep showing up. And then over 5 years, that turned into the feature that it is. And he knows that in my artwork, in my films, I do a lot of animation, a lot of handcrafted animation with paper cutouts, claymation, After Effects, a kind of mixture of like everything, even like printing frames of the film, drawing on those frames as printouts, taping them up in the neighborhood, refilming them so it looks like flyers are animating with characters inside, which is really difficult.
I bet.
And using that as transitions. So the more he saw that, like, add more, add more, add more. And I'm like, Scooter, this is already like a lot. And also keeping in mind that I wanted it to be a little less craziness as Man in Camo and a little more kind of following his, he's a lot more calm than I am. Right. I'm a lot more hyper and like, you know, exploding in a million different ways. So I tried to maintain that integrity to his character in the film.
It's clearly your vision, his art, your art, his vision. You know, it's a very much a collaborative effort, and I can see so much of your art and other artists as well that are involved. So one of the things I was really drawn to in the film as well was the music, and I was wondering what made you choose that music, and then also other artists in the documentary, some who are as established as Scooter, yourself. Did they come along as part of Scooter's scene, or how did that the music and the other artists, how did they all get involved?
Yeah, everyone interviewed in the film, pretty much except for James Rubio and Ted Reeder, who were part of the antagonist movement. And Scooter, I would say, is a part of the antagonist movement too, but now. But the rest of everybody else in the film is part of his scene. And so me meeting them was usually the first time when I would interview them, except for Jorge, I knew before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his community, I wanted to, he selected who would talk, and that was like his community that I was trying to showcase in the film. And all very talented. A lot of them are in that pyramid book that are coming out. Jorge actually is the editor for that book. So yeah, there's that community. As far as the music scene in it, Alex's music is now in the library. So like what I do is I collect musicians only that I know. I only want to work again with artists and musicians that I know. I build a library and then I test out different tracks for different moods of every film. So, you know, from doing the fanzine, again, I would interview bands. In DC, I used to do stuff for Discord Records where I would do merchandising for and shoot videos for bands like Desiderata, which was Ian McKay, Amanda McKay, Ian's little sister's band.
Oh, cool.
And then moving to New York, I would work with a lot of punk rock bands like H2O.
Mm-hmm.
I did merch and did their home video for Epitaph Records. And then the you know, the women's documentary. So I had this history of like documenting and filming and doing merchandise for a bunch of bands. Over the years, I've collected a whole kind of catalog of musicians, whether they're Japanese, like the Hard Nips, which is a band in Scooter's film, from all Japanese band, or Dahlia, who's actually my department head at FIT, does this kind of like German kind of dance music stuff. So yeah, I'm always collecting artists, for like Joe Reyna from Texas. Wherever I travel, if I meet a musician or I'm in a bar, you know, again, I don't drink, but drinking soda in a bar, meet a musician, I will collect their info and, you know, tell them, you're not going to get paid a lot. You're going to get paid very little, because I have a, you know, my films are all self-funded. I work a day job, I save up and I shoot, but you will get paid something and I will love to use your film. So I have a large archive of musicians, meaning also if you see like Man in Camo and some of these other films, you'll see some carryover from one band will be in several films. And then I always introduce new bands in it. But yeah, I really care about the soundtrack.
I bet. Yeah. I mean, and it can change the whole tone of the film, depending on whatever music you do put in it. So it makes sense that you'd be very particular about the music. But I have to say that everything you're saying right now is so amazing to me, and also your antagonist art movement. That is exactly what I feel like the East Village is all about. That's exactly what I feel like. That's why I wanted to live here, is everybody supporting everybody. And like, that's the only way we're going to be able to survive, you know? So I see that in the film and in your films in general as well. And I just think that's really cool.
It's also for selfish reasons. Every time I build those communities, that community also supports me in what I do creatively.
Right.
So I don't want to make it sound like, I definitely never want to sound like the good guy or the angel. I'm not interested in that.
But that's what it's all about. It's that it's working together rather than competing. And when you work together, you get something out of it too.
There's an army of creative people who move to New York City and get stuck with high rents, but you can still do what you want to do creatively if you work together and find your supportive army.
Exactly.
Why you got to wear camo and be ready for war.
Yeah.
And on that note, we should remind listeners that they can go to ethanminsker.com and click on films to watch Scooter LaForge, A Life of Art, and a number of other films you've done, and learn about the other artwork that you do. Perhaps you can just finish by telling us what's coming up next for you.
Yes. You can also find me on Instagram, Ethan Minsker. This summer, we have an Art Pond initiative through our nonprofit, where we have 5 weeks of artists where we teach them how to curate a show. And hopefully those curators slash artists go back into their communities and create more opportunity for artists in their communities. So from the antagonist movement, putting on shows, dealing with lots of artists, the new approach is create curators who will make more opportunities for many, many, many multiplying artists, as opposed to just putting on shows. So on 28th Street this summer, Art Pond, come by and check it out. I also have the next film. It's called Film Threat Sucks. I did not come up with the title. It's about a magazine, a fanzine in the 80s called Film Threat Magazine, which launched the careers of a lot of filmmakers, including Tarantino, Kevin Smith, just basically anybody who was an independent filmmaker in that time. And it went all the way up through Larry Flint Publications when they were high gloss, and they still exist today as a podcast. So that film is almost done. We're just trying to get funding for color correction, audio mix, legal, and all of those things. Other than that, still making my art, showing at Culture Lab at the end of June for 3 days, and again at Culture Lab in Long Island City in November under Halix C. Armageddon, who's the main artist, and I'm a supporting artist, who is somebody I collaborate with constantly, and I met through doing Scooter LaForge, A Life of Art. So, yeah.
And when will you be sleeping next?
I had good night's sleep last night.
Okay.
I got to do the finals for the FIT students tomorrow, and then I have a few days where I can relax, and then never sleeping again.
Okay.
So, ethanminsker.com and Ethan Minsker on Instagram?
Yeah.
To keep up to date with what Ethan's doing. It's been a pleasure chatting with you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You guys are wonderful. host and interviewers, and I appreciate the opportunity
to
get my message out.
Absolutely.
Especially on Avenue B, where they need to know.
You're back on Avenue B.
Yeah, back on B. Yeah.
Once again, this has been Alex Carpenter with my co-host Megan Haywood for Eye on the East Village, live and direct from High Note Radio Bar at 188 Avenue B. That's between 11th and 12th Streets here in the East Village. Again, visit high-note.nyc to check out their roster of live DJ shows, as well as their amazing food, coffee, and cocktail menus. And don't forget to subscribe to Eye on the East Village on Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. Or, of course, live and direct on jasoncharles.net podcast network talk channel. And you can find out about my co-host's store, East Village Vintage Collective, by going to EV Vintage Collective on Instagram or eastvillagevintagecollective.com. We are up and running on 12th Street between A and B and selling some awesome vintage wares and home goods.
It's a very cool shop. I highly recommend it. And you can find my artwork in there too.
Yes. We're all working together.
All doing co-plugs for one another.
Yes.
Thanks again to High Note. Thanks, Ethan. And thanks everyone out there for listening.
You've been listening to
Eye on the East Village
on jasoncharles.net.
JasonCharles.net.
Deep talk, deep sounds.
Oh, wow. That's deep.
Very, very deep.
This has been an UptownRadio.net production.